Welcome back to Planet Waves FM's continuing coverage of the People of the United Astrology Conference 2012 being held in New Orleans, Louisiana. As we approach the conclusion of our interviews, this is our next to last interview. I'm sitting with Rebecca Gordon, who is someone who's gradually becoming an old friend from the nightlight astrology scene in New York City, where I have met her a couple of times. She's maybe been in my classes once or twice, and she's a professional astrologer who began unusually young at age 24. It's not easy to be a professional astrologer at age 24. So if you are doing a good job, I commend you on having the obviously multiple lifetime and rearing to be able to handle the human race and all that they go through. So welcome to Planet Waves, Rebecca.
Thank you, Eric. It's great to be here.
All righty. So now, in our pre-interview discussion, you were describing how you have an experience of hearing people's charts.
Yes.
And I've never quite heard that. Come a little closer to the mic.
Sure.
I've never quite heard that. Anyone say that. Now, all of my astrology teachers are composers.
Yes.
Long list. Not just like one or two. Like pretty much everyone who's really taught me astrology is a musical composer and musician in some way. So that, I have that musical connection to the music of the spheres, but you have a kind of a clairaudience.
I mean, I equate astrology with music. It's so similar to me, and as music is in a way the layer between human and spirit, it's a connector, it's a conduit.
Right.
And when I first started looking at charts, actually I was 14, and I had a stepmother who's an astrologer, and I looked at it and I saw it in a visual way, of course, as almost art, but also a sound, even without even knowing what the planets meant. Before that, it was an image that I would quickly translate to sound, but not knowing what it meant.
So you would see an astrological chart and translate it to sound?
Well, now I do it in a very different way.
But what was the early experience?
The early experience was, I found an old dust-covered Linda Goodman book, and it came out of a shelf for me with happened to be a folded-up chart inside.
Ah.
I was 14 and babysitting, and I opened up that folded-up chart, and I just started staring at the symbols, and the woman came home that night. I said, "You must tell me everything about this," because I had been up to that point studying astronomy and looking at some Carl Jung books. I didn't really know what they meant, but I just read them over and over. So this sort of brought these two worlds together. And as I looked at the symbols, the more and more, I was looking at them also at this point from an artistic way, as the shapes and what they could mean, and really trying to figure this out. This woman later became my mentor in astrology, and as the more I studied, the more I began to listen, and they became, the stelliums became almost crescendos, and I would hear resonances as I studied the chart, and it would actually create a symphony for me, and
that's pretty amazing. I mean, that's pretty amazing. It's a direct hookup, and it's almost primal. Are you aware that hearing is the first sense that develops in the womb?
That's true. Right.
So this is, it's literally primal by any good definition of that word. That's pretty amazing. But clairaudience is a bit different. I mean, it's an inner hearing. It's the ability to hear things in etheric space as well.
Yes.
So what does it sound like? Does it sound like music as I would recognize music?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Instruments I would recognize? Or some other celestial kind of instrument?
Actually, I've had dreams where entire symphonies were played, and when I'm studying a chart a lot, I sometimes dream of music plays through, and I look at the chart the next day, and it sounds similar. Sometimes there's an instrument, there's a sound that I've never heard before, and but most of the time, you can recognize it. There's a wide variety, like I'll say, when the chart is a lot of air and fire. It's a very different sound, and I mean, this is very typical in an earth-water chart, but oppositions, each planet, each sign, and it's almost like I can often running a finger through it and actually in a very palpable way, touching the chart to kind of listen through it. And this has been more, over time, I've been focusing more on this and creating more space to work on this. Now I'm actually, for the first time in the last 2 months, I've committed to making the music, which is which is huge for me because I'm sitting with a composer now every day, and we're translating.
So you're not a trained musician.
Oh, I played the cello growing up.
Ah, that counts.
Yeah,
that's a difficult instrument to play.
You know, here's something interesting. My mother was a cellist, and she played the cello throughout the time I was in the womb.
Well, that would help.
You know, right.
So you're developing hearing, and the first thing you're hearing is a cello, basically, and a lot of jabbering, but a cello.
Throughout the entire pregnancy, all she did was play cello.
That's incredible.
So
you're kind of a case study.
Yeah, I suppose so.
I had a friend who was born on LSD. He's kind of a... He's kind of a case study. He's a heck of a tie-dye artist. So you were gestated on the sound of a cello and then learned how to play the cello.
Yeah.
Do you still play?
I was competing, like, nationally when I was 12 years old. I was in...
you throw the bow and see how far you can... How do you compete with a cello?
Yeah.
A cello?
You know, all of these. That's a good one.
They make it into a slam, like the cello slam. Oh, yeah. I won't go there. But so now go ahead.
I mean, I didn't play classically for so long. You know, in my teen years, I played cello with a punk band, and then I left that, and I didn't play for a while. Now I'm starting to pick it up again, so it's actually becoming new all over again.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so what's coming out of these compositions?
Well, we're actually creating it on... We're creating it with
computer?
Yes, the computer, but I don't remember the name of the system. There's a million. There's Pro Tools and all of these, and you can use virtually any instrument. So it's so expansive, and I'm describing the sound, actually, to the composer.
Right.
And he's letting me know what can translate and how can, and really everything is possible. So it's just trying to get the translations. Now, what we've done so far is actually played people resonances in their chart, as well as resonances in other people's charts, and ask them if they can respond to it, and to see if they respond to the one which is in their chart. And so far, it's been working.
You're kind of doing a test, doing an experiment to hear if they can recognize their own musical composition based on their chart.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Well, once you're sure, you can stop the test and just work with it, because I think you can trust this method. I mean, this has come right from you. From a really deep place. I mean, definitely experiment, but I'm hearing you say you've got something dependable and at the very least really touching and interesting to people who are going to experience it. I mean, we have this problem with astrology of what is the vector of healing? You know, I don't know how many astrologers think about this, but, you know, there are some who will work with the chart, and they know they're very quietly behind the scenes doing work on the energetic level. Sometimes there is keying the client into the coming transit and helping them orient on it so that they're sort of facing the right way when the wave comes, and then they can either surf or pierce through it or something, not get toppled. And then there are a lot of other possibilities for what to do. And composing music to someone's chart is really an amazing one.
Well, it's bypassing the conscious, right? It's going straight.
It's more kinesthetic. It's like a direct vector,
right? And I mean, I see astrology as really this is healing. And when we at first, before I was doing this, I was I'll say looking at the charts. It was really about, okay, they're going to have the transit. It's going to be like a Pluto transit, a lot of energy coming to their life. Is there the space in that person even to handle the energy of the transit? So in the beginning, you know, I would look at it and it would really be about creating the emptiness in them, getting, you know, what is this going to be about coming into their life? Now, if they can listen, if they can tune in on a vibrational level, even to the sound, now this is what I'm working with now, into the sound of the upcoming transit. If we can key in to a Pluto resonance, now, how might that help to create the space within them to translate this and really go through it in a very evolutionary way, mm-hmm. in a truly helpful and healing way? We can change the meaning of this Pluto transit.
Yeah, a lot of it's about being open to the experience and to the change that particular transit is describing. If we're open, it works a lot better.
Yes.
Rather than being pried open. Or blown open.
Yep. or even being told and told again in many different ways, which
only a couple of times in my career have I actually had to warn someone who I thought was being thick as a brick and Pluto was coming. I can really only remember one time, and I felt like I didn't really have a choice ethically to say that. But it's much better to prepare the ground with someone and to go over the possibilities for what a Pluto transit can be.
For sure.
The ever dreaded Pluto transit.
Yeah.
But now we have Eris to worry about. So
exactly.
But you know, if Eris is coming, she won't get there for a long time. But the other part is, if she gets there, she's going to stay there for a long time, especially in Aries.
Exactly.
So, speaking of Eris, how many planets have you gone out? Like, do you have a tone for Chiron or a sense of the sound of Chiron? And have you been working with any of the minor planets, other minor planets?
Oh, not yet. And I'm going to be really interested in how that all unfolds. Actually, right now, we're doing a lot of work with Pluto and Scorpio and working on an album that's actually going through the signs, too. So there's two tracks I'm running. The one is... actually working on an album that goes through the entire zodiac, so Aries through Pisces, and it's a truly experiential journey, as in the Song of Scorpio, we take you through the from the scorpion and the eagle and the phoenix part, and we go completely around. So the songs are actually moving through the mythologies as well, but I have not explored the sounds of Chiron and Eris and the asteroids or any trans-Neptunians yet. It all, I'm sure, will unfold as we continue. And
as you tune into the energy, you know, you find it's there and you notice it.
Oh yes, you know, it's interesting because as we're tuning into a planet and working on a resonance for that day, that week, that period of time. You know, I realized in all of the time that we're not working on the music, that just this extra consciousness of the energy of that planet's resonating through my life because I'm listening to it all of the time. So I'm completely feeling this project on every level.
Right.
So
Because you're listening to the work product.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're doing charts all day.
Right.
And then your mind is going the rest of the time.
Yes, yes. And of course, it's interesting, too, to see then the clients that are coming in as I'm working on it. And it's very reflective. Right now, we're working so much on the Scorpio and Pluto portion. And of course, I'm getting a lot of clients right now with Pluto conjunct the Sun. And, you know, this is what's happening. It's sort of showing up in that way. So it's...
Right. So what's the music of the Uranus-Pluto square?
Oh, yeah. This is very complex.
Uh-huh.
Okay, actually, well, I don't.
Can you sing me a few verses of it?
I don't know if you want to hear it, but
Is there any harmonic to it? I mean, is this complete cacophony?
Well, this is the thing. With each one, it has to. It can't be just static. It can be static, but then it has to show the many faces, and it has to tell somewhat of a story. Because we know that Uranus Pluto has still a myriad of manifestations, and I would like to find the healing within each at some point in the song. There's many levels to the sound. There's many layers. And there is healing within each opposition and each square embedded in it, or else why listen to it?
Yeah, well, but it's happening.
Yes, and
I mean, there's nothing we can do about that. Well, unless you pretend that Pluto doesn't... We could always just go running back to Hellenistic astrology.
It is absolutely going to be cacophonous in some ways, and there's just going to be multi-layers to it. We haven't yet explored that, but on June 22nd, I'm hosting a retreat while it's going to be happening. So I plan to have that sound worked out by then. And we should.
Where's the retreat?
It's going to be in the Berkshires.
Right. So you said you do retreats in the Berkshires.
Yes, I do. Yes.
Where do you host them?
It's actually at the top of Mount Greylock. It's quite close to Kripalu, and one of the most beautiful mountaintops in the Berkshires. And it's called Bascom Lodge.
Bascom Lodge. Okay, yes. And is it still open to registration?
It is, yes.
So if people are interested in coming to your Music of the Spheres workshop about the Uranus-Pluto square. So you have a workshop? You have a retreat? Is it timed? Wait, the square is the 27th, one of seven.
It's going to be quite close. The retreat is the 22nd to the 24th. It's three days, and it's called Astronomy.
No, the 24th is actually. I'm thinking of the Venus Station Direct. I'm sorry. So what's the title again?
Astronomy, Astrology, and Alchemy. So we are going to have professional astronomers there, astronomers that actually love astrology.
Who do you have?
They're from the organization in Amherst, and I don't remember the names right now. I don't have them.
So did you create the retreat?
I put this together, yes.
Right.
So they are going to give us a virtual tour of the sky. One of them is a planetary physics professor, and we have one who's going to be going through the mythology of the sky, as scholars on that mythology. So they'll be doing virtual presentations. I'll be doing presentations. We will be working some with sound, sound, astronomy, astrology, and alcemy. So 3 days of that.
Yeah, excellent. And are people bringing instruments or sound-making devices, or is that going to be all provided?
We will be bringing that, but I suppose people can bring their own, too. That sounds like a nice idea. Like that.
Well, sure, people have their favorite thing that they make sound with.
Yeah, that's great, actually. I would encourage that.
Awesome.
Yes.
The person I call my astrology teacher, really the person who sort of I got grounded with, David Arner, is a composer. And he recently did a tribute to Hermes, which we'll soon have on, I guess he's tentatively said yes, and we're going to put it with an interview. So it's a full concert that he did in the recital hall at RPI, which is the reading of a translation, a relatively modern kind of satirical but accurate translation of the first day of Hermes' life. You know, he's born, and then first thing he does is pick up the lyre, and then the next thing he does is steal Apollo's prized cows and skins them and all.
Right.
With chapter after chapter, he would read a verse and then play a movement of the piece, then read a verse and play a movement. He went through the whole thing on grand piano and then took an intermission, and then he subjected us to the whole thing a second time on harpsichord.
Oh, how was that?
It was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. I couldn't stop laughing through the whole thing. So, you know, nobody else was like having the experience that it was like Jon Stewart, but I was, so I had a lot of fun.
I love it.
Listening to it, and I learned a lot about Hermes through it, but he was doing this thing where he was imparting the mythology through a musical composition.
Yes.
Like 7 or 8 movements in this one composition, then played on 2 instruments, a modern instrument and a more primitive instrument.
Wow. This is what happens when you create music. Sometimes you don't even know what you're doing, and then you listen to it afterwards, and we're learning about the mythologies, as you just said, afterwards, listening to these things as we go through.
Well, there's the energetic conveyance in the music. You know, there's the idea level conveyance, which is powerful and useful in the words. And then, you know, then in this one interpreter translates it for us into music.
Right.
It's kind of modern, but he's a very disciplined player. So it was like really modern, improvised part of it. But you can tell that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm learning the modes.
I would love to hear that.
Yeah, well, you can meet David if you want. I mean, you know, he would love you, and you would love him. He's very, very, very old. He's only in his 50s, but you know that he was hanging out with Mozart and these people, or was Mozart or something like that. Like,
absolutely.
You know, he's got a Capricorn moon and all that. So, I'm learning the modes, and I always try to learn something new that's very challenging. And my guitar teacher went to Berkeley in Massachusetts, and I guess a lot of guitar teachers come out of there. A lot of people just make a career out of teaching other people how to play music, which is pretty good. I'm learning the modes. I had no idea this existed. You know what I mean? Like Dorian, it's Ionian, Dorian. What's the one that begins on E with all white keys? Then there's Lydian, Mixolydian. You know what I'm talking about?
Actually, I don't. Yeah.
So I've been trying to sort this out as I learn it. But imagine a piano keyboard, take away all the black keys, and you just have the white keys, and you play a scale C to C.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Ionian mode. It's the white keys. It's a major scale.
Right.
Then you play the same notes, but you play from D to D. Same order, same notes, you just start and end on a different note. That's a different mode. Then you start on E. I'm drawing a blank on what
yes.
E is. And then might be Phrygian. Right, Phrygian mode. So that's E to E, leaving out... The E has 2 flats, is that right? E, E,
Not as far as I know. You know, I don't read music anymore. I haven't read music in about 15 years.
Okay, so that's just Circle of Fifths stuff. I mean, okay, but I'll come back to that.
Oh, but the Circle of Fifths is so fascinating.
It's exactly the chart.
I mean, this is how it started, too.
But this is like progressing the Circle of Fifths. You're still in you're still in the scale of C with no sharps or flats, all white notes. But when you start on F and play up to the next F, that's a different mode of that scale.
Yes.
And you know, I'm thinking, like, why could this make a difference? How can they even tell what mode they're in if it's the same notes in the same order?
Right.
So he said, I'm going to teach you this to open your ears up. You're going to open your ears up. And Jerry Garcia liked Mixolydian mode a lot. That's G to G played on the C scale. Or you can play it in any key, but it's the equivalent of all white notes from G to G. So you look this up in Wikipedia, they give you a list of the songs played, but it's the way that you unfold the key in this way I had never been exposed to in my previous musical education.
Oh, yes.
That I thought is like really an interesting way to sort of, it's almost like progressions against the scale.
Wow, that's really fascinating. I mean, that's the next step to look. We haven't gone into that yet. But I will say something about the keys. Like, you know, when you think of, to bring it back to astrology, you think of a sign, let's say Scorpio, and we're sort of playing through the notes. We're going C, D, E, and we get to D, and it's like, of course, Scorpio. You know, this is...
D.
Yes. For example.
Which would be Dorian mode.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, we can sit at a piano one day and play that, and I'd like to hear your opinion. I mean,
right.
Or guitar. I can actually play these. I'm crusty at it, but I can do them.
We should have a piano at the next conference, yes.
Well, David has been known to do that. At the Project Hindsight conference, he was doing improvisational piano. I mean, this is why we need our own conferences, though, that are small and intimate enough. And you're doing one. You've begun exactly this. And I don't know if you read my manifesto on a week before the conference began, but I made like a 12-point manifesto about what we need to do at astrology conferences. And high on the list was invite astronomers.
Oh, I love it.
And I said that there's I can even read you the language. You'll recognize the idea.
Well, the idea of an astrology conference or an astrology retreat to me would just intrinsically be going back to the sky, going back to nature, because unfortunately we have to look at, you know, we're looking at computers to do all of this work.
Yes.
So when I first thought I'm going to have an astrology retreat, immediately we have to be in a perfect place for sky watching and have great astronomers there that actually love astrology.
Yes,
well, I'll
read you what I
said.
Just because you're borrowing some language. Minor planet astrologers, starting with Zane Stein, who wrote the first book on Chiron, have a tradition of being friends with astronomers. We don't do this us them thing that some people like to do. No, we need them. We're doing new planets. There's not an ephemeris in the bookstore. All right. So, yes, there are actually some astrologers who are intrigued by what we're doing. Astrologers would benefit from hearing about the latest advances in astronomy from the scientists themselves. You're going a step further. You're saying, let's get under the sky and see the sky. Our profession has astronomy as its main basis, and this is the field where there has been astonishing growth and development the past 20 or so years. Let's get together.
Yes.
So, voila.
Thank you. That's so beautiful. I mean, throughout history, we've come together and apart from them, and it's about time we join hands again there.
They've depended on us. You know, we kept the ephemerides published when there was dark times in science, and we are better occultists than they are. We are occultists. They are not occultists, really. And so they needed us to keep their tools passing down the tradition, and then, you know...
Exactly.
Kepler was some really powerful astronomers were astrologers and mathematicians.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it was, of course, all one in medicine and all of these astronomers, though, apparently they're one of them actually makes telescopes that's going to be at this conference.
Mm-hmm.
And he custom makes them, too, for people. Now, he's going to be bringing some of the most high-powered telescopes where we can actually see Neptune and Uranus, so all the way out there, the entire Kuiper Belt. You know, all of these things that are like, we've been looking at.
The telescope to see the Kuiper Belt with?
Oh, sorry, no. No.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me take that back.
It's a big truck to carry that.
Sorry. But you know, there's this list of like M13, M83, these different clusters and
yes.
the Beehive and all of these things, which are apparently going to be in view at this time. I have a long list somewhere.
And let me now, correct that. It would take only a really good telescope. I bet there can be some viewing of Kuiper objects with that stuff. Okay, so now looking at clusters, these Messier clusters and
right.
things in the sky that are not planets.
Right. I mean, those will be quite visible, some of the largest star clusters. And just for us as astrologers to be able to see the things we've been looking at almost all of our lives on a computer, it seems important for me to actually see it, which is how it all began.
Yep. So. Yes, it began with that, and then that got translated into stories because they had a lot of time on their hands, and it was evocative, and then we had to grow food. And I think that astrology grows out of a mix. Now, there may be other... Robert Schmidt would say other things were going on because the database seems to appear spontaneously, the rulerships, all these associations. But I think clearly in Sumerian or Babylonian times, they had two things on their mind, growing food and wow, look at the story in the sky.
Yes.
And I think we are storytellers in the storytelling tradition, most of us.
Exactly. And they're evolving. Right now.
Yes, they're very rapidly evolving.
Yes.
Well, think about how in 1977 there were 2,060 minor planets. 2060 Chiron was named in 77.
Right.
And by 2000 it was 20,000 Varuna. And then by, I think it's 20,000? No, it's... Yeah, 20,000 Varuna, and then Quatuar gets 50,000. That's like in the early 2000s. So it's this exponential jump
that's
in the...
Huge.
Yeah, it's really, really fast. And they're up to 600,000 now. There's 300,000 that are cataloged, numbered, orbits confirmed, and another 300,000 just orbiting our Earth that have provisional names but are not cataloged because the orbit's not confirmed yet. But it's a steady... As you can see, they're up to 300,000 orbits confirmed, but it was only 20,000 in 2000.
How incredible.
And so it's, you know, a lot's changing, and it's indicative of something. It's
new mythologies.
Well, a complete rearrangement of consciousness, I think,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And our perception of reality, so-called.
Exactly. Sure, we are all experiencing this as the Earth is evolving, and new planets are being discovered, and new parts within us are emerging.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right, so how do people contact you to find out about this retreat if they're in the New York area or Boston or something like that and want to come up?
Sure. I will give you all the information here. You can contact me at Rebecca@mypathastrology.com, and that's my personal email address. And if you'd like to find out about the retreat, I'll give you my website, and you can click onto the classes page there and then go onto the retreat page. Mm-hmm. And my website is www.mypathastrology.com, and that's MYPATH astrology. I also have a year-round school in New York City where I teach a 12-week beginners class, 12-week intermediates, and workshops throughout the spring and summer, and a full-time practice with personal clients and all of that, and all soon to be music too. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, for those who can't see Rebecca, she really looks like a classical musician. Whatever a classical musician looks like, you have that kind of composure and that not so modern look about you. You have you're kind of like mahogany.
You know, I've heard that before.
So there you go.
All right,
a pleasure. Rebecca Gordon of New York City. Thank you for being a guest on. You're most welcome. You are listening to Planet Waves FM's continuing, almost finished coverage of the United Astrology Conference and the people at the United Astrology Conference. We're wrapping up this particular segment at 1:35 on the 28th of May. We've been speaking with Rebecca Gordon. We will link her website as well from the archive page. And I guess at this point, unless something else manifests, we have one more interview. We'll be back with that in a little while. Bye for now.